Let me just briefly outline what I want to talk after a short introduction here of my background. I want to talk about the solutions we have today, sustainable solutions in Brazil, how we're beating back the oil company and are now actually made gasoline the alternative fuel in Brazil, how we're doing this sustainably. I want to talk very briefly about why we're in love with sugarcane in our industry. That is in no way a comparison with any other feedstock, but simply why we think ours is best. And then I do want to talk about this crazy food versus fuel debate. I think I will hopefully inspire a little bit of you to see that the real unsustainable, the real culprit here is indeed oil. First, briefly, for those who don't know, UNICA is the leading sugarcane industry association in Brazil, representing about 110 producers. We represent, our member companies represent about 60% of all ethanol and sugar produced in Brazil. We're also a leading producer of electricity, surplus electricity that comes from our cogeneration facilities. And as you can tell, we're all now active abroad internationally. I've just set up an office for our trade association in Washington, and we've done one in Brussels. We hope to do one soon in Asia. First, location, 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 right? Let me just point out where we grow sugarcane in Brazil. For those who failed geography class like myself, Brazil's larger than continental U.S., and so when you look at that map, that's what you should think about. And where you see in red is where the growing areas for sugarcane are. The Amazon is at the very least about 1,000 or more, 1,500 miles from the cane growing areas. South central Brazil, where our membership has its base, represents about close to 90% of all production of sugarcane in Brazil. Second thing, I just noticed in the news this morning that Google is trying to save the Amazon with their maps. We've been doing this for many years. You can go on our website and see exactly where the cane is grown in Brazil. That's just a zooming in of the previous chart, and where you see in green is where we're growing cane. Again, very far from the Amazon. And we, you know, at this point, our industry has three products on the line. We will process about 550 million metric tons of cane this year, which we'll use to produce about 26 billion liters, about 5.5 to 6 billion gallons of ethanol this year. We will produce about 33 million metric tons of raw sugar, of which about two-thirds of that sugar does go to the world market. On ethanol, we only export about 5-10% of our production. And then recently we've been able to improve technology and start selling electricity into the grid. This year we'll sell about 3,000 megawatts, which is quite substantial for those who don't know much about the electricity industry. And we believe we will do much higher than that, in fact, five times higher in a few years. Let me talk briefly about how sustainable our product is and why we're making gasoline the alternative fuel in Brazil. That chart will show to you total volumes of gasoline versus ethanol consumed in Brazil. In the beginning of February of this year, we surpassed ethanol demand or consumption surpassed that of gasoline. My friends, that is a big victory. The oil company now is in a corner, and I think as Bob is seeing, they're not going to take this easily. How we're achieving this? No, we're not achieving this by exporting it out or mandates or anything, but simply by consumer choice. 90% of all the new vehicles today are flex fuel in Brazil. In fact, we're now up to about 25% of our fleet is flex fuel. What that means is that because, as I'll show in the next slide, the price of ethanol is substantially lower than gasoline, as it is here in the U.S. as well, consumers are choosing to put, in our case, E100, E85 here in the United States, straight into their pump and saying, forget about gasoline. And so that chart will show you that we've got about 5.5 million flex fuel vehicles on the road, and we're consuming about 1,500 liters of ethanol every month. This is why people are choosing ethanol over gasoline. This is the price of gasoline and ethanol throughout the country. That gasoline, by the way, is not pure gasoline, is E25 gasoline. because there's no pure gasoline in Brazil. The Brazilian cars can't even take pure gasoline anymore because they've been adjusted to accept ethanol. And as you can see, we have at about almost half the price of gasoline is ethanol, kind of a no-brainer. And recently I listened to remarks by the CEO of Petrobras, the state-owned oil company in Brazil, and he said that some of his shares are traded on Wall Street, and the analysts were asking, why don't you raise your price of gasoline? Price of oil, as you can see on this chart, is skyrocketing. He said, I can't. If I raise the price of gasoline, I'll lose market share. My friends, that is exactly where we want to put them. Now, you may be thinking, how are the Brazilians doing this? For sure they must be cutting down the rainforest, if not directly, as some claim indirectly. Let me just point out that in Brazil we use 1% of arable land to displace 50% of our gasoline consumption. I won't bore you too much with the charts, but basically about 40% of Brazil's total land mass is arable. Of our arable land, only 1% makes its way to ethanol. In fact, depending how you want to look at it, 3 or 6 times less than what is used for soybean. And in fact, in Brazil, we plant twice as much corn as we do sugarcane. Now, our love affair with sugarcane is, you know, maybe it's personal, maybe it's cultural heritage, but it's also because we think it's truly an advanced biomass feedstock. You've seen some of these charts, and this is not to denigrate or suggest anything negative on the others, but why we think we do have a slightly different product. On a wheels, well-to-wheels basis, life cycle assessment, we have a reduction of up to 90% in greenhouse gas emissions. And I think as if you see this chart historically, you'll see that grains, particularly from corn on some of the new generation mills, they're seeing significant gains as well. But more importantly, two things you want to remember this, that the RFS, the Renewable Fuel Standard that Bob mentioned, has a threshold of 50% greenhouse gas reduction for advanced biofuels. We do that today in Brazil, and we're ready to do it show it how it can be done around the world. And secondly, oil can't do this. Yesterday's oil may have been really easy to find and easy to produce. Today's oil is going to come from very deep off the oceans of Brazil, far in the tar sand areas of Canada, or somewhere off the coast of Africa, or wherever else ingenuity will take us. But the issue is that is carbon that's been sequestered for about 400 million years. So whatever carbon debt calculations you hear from some of these Science magazine articles, remember this, that any biofuel is consuming carbon that is currently in the atmosphere and is, let's call it, recycling. A fossil fuel is bringing new carbon into the atmosphere that's been sequestered underground through 400 million year history. You also see about that we believe that we're in love with sugarcane because it has a very good energy balance. For every unit of fossil fuel input that goes in, we get about 9.3 units out. Again, oil. Oil used to be about 100, 200 to 1. If you go look at some of the recent studies, you will see that they're down to 15, 10 to 1. And in fact, some will say that it will be truly negative very soon because of the amount of energy required to extract this oil, to refine it, to remove the water, to remove all the other aspects that they're bringing up from underground. And then in terms of production yields, we've been working a lot on this, and we think there are gains that can be made for not just for us, but for all of us, for agriculture tremendously. And I'll come back to this point a little bit later. But we produce today about 7,500 liters per hectare. For those who want to do the calculation to acres, a hectare is 2.5 acres, a liter, a gallon is about 3.75 liters. And I should also say here that this is average for everybody, as I think anybody will point out that you've got some farmers who go much beyond that average. In Brazil, we've got folks doing 10,000 liters per hectare, and I'm quite certain that number from corn, which was updated just recently based on the USDA data, will continue to increase. But what I really like about sugarcane is that, as I've tried to coin the term, it's a carbon-absorbing machine. This is a very crude graph to try to show you what cane looks like sort of in a graphic nature in the field. And what I want you to remember are two things. One is the volume of absorption of carbon above ground and underground. So every year, we're absorbing 22 to 36 tons of carbon per hectare when we grow cane. And underground, every year, we're absorbing about 3 to 5 tons of carbon per hectare. We do that 5 to 7 years before we even have to disturb the soil and replant the cane without affecting yields. And then if you hear this talk of, well, we just need a lake, nature takes its course, you know, yes, there are 200 million hectares of pastures in Brazil and they should remain the way they are. Well, consider this. On an annual basis, the carbon per hectare for plain pasture, some of it in this case slightly degraded with very low levels of efficiency, you have about 3 to 8 tons of carbon sequestered per hectare a year. If you do a mechanized sugarcane harvest, you'll get considerably more, 22 to 36 tons of carbon per hectare. My friends, there's no doubt on this that if the choice is simply carbon sequestration, perhaps what we should really focus is the inefficient use of cattle ranching in Brazil, which indeed is one of the primary reasons the rainforest is under siege. Our understanding of sugarcane has evolved considerably in the last few years. For thousands of years, we've been, and many people around the world have been processing cane conventionally, taking about a third of the cane's energy from the liquid cane juice, making sugar and making ethanol. And now we've managed to get the other third, which was the bagasse, the dried up sawdust-looking thing, and we've just burned it to produce electricity. But we believe with advanced technologies and with mechanization of the harvest, we'll be able to bring even more biomass. In fact, another third of the cane's energy potential is in there. And we'll either use that to produce more electricity, or if the market dynamics allow, we will produce more ethanol or other biofuels. And I also point out that this year, we're not stopping in ethanol, we're not stopping in sugar, and we're not stopping in electricity. This year, we will begin producing diesel, as some have described, a biocrude from sugar. Scientists have developed organisms that instead of converting sugar into ethanol, will now convert sugar into a hydrocarbon. Ironically, even some of the oil companies are investing in that technology. Now, one aspect that I want to point out is sort of this third product that we have on the shelf today, and that is bioelectricity. It's electricity as you and I know it, but I just want to point out the potential. On the dark gray there, that's if we just continue status quo. By 2012, we believe we will have about 4,000 to 5,000 megawatts of electricity. That's a considerable amount of electricity. But if we fully mechanize our harvest, which we've already halfway there, and we will do it by 2012, we will be able to produce 10,000 megawatts of electricity. If my calculations are right, that's about the average consumption of electricity in the state of Tennessee. Imagine if you were just doing that from local feedstock. Imagine if you were doing that by using just 1% of arable land, and to boot, you were displacing 50% of gasoline consumption. Now, finally, as you may have seen in the press, Bob Dineen and I sometimes have this squabble over tariffs and subsidies, and I won't get into them here now because we agree on 99% of the things. But one thing I'd like to point out is what I call in Brazil insurance, and call it when I speak, insurance against subsidies. On the first bar there, what you have is our industry today, roughly about $20 billion industry total. About 40% of that revenue comes from ethanol production and sales mostly domestically, and then the remaining is from the sugar market. Again, and historically, has always been export-oriented. If we go forward in 2015, we believe we will still be a significant ethanol player. We believe we will increase our exports a little bit, and we believe that we'll continue to produce significant quantities of sugar. But what we do know is that if all goes well, we will produce significant quantities of electricity. That means that our producers will have three hedges instead of just two when they try to figure out their economics. They'll be able to be in the sugar market at home and abroad. They'll be able to be in the ethanol market at home and abroad. And they'll be able to be in the long-term electricity market by contracting with power companies. Again, insurance against subsidies. Let me just make my final comments on the food versus fuel debate. I never quite figure out what that means. If one has to win over the other, I think both can win, and I think we can show you how it is being done in Brazil. First, just basically, our guys, we did some number crunching, and if you basically start back in, I think, as about 10 years ago, you'll see that, as it's pretty clear, oil prices have gone up considerably, about 500%. Food prices during the same period gone up about 36%. Yes, there has been a decrease in recent times, but I think this chart clearly shows is that food prices have been not keeping up with energy prices for a long time. Second thing is ethanol is not the villain here. If you want to look at land use around the world, just do the math. The UN's Food and Agriculture Organization did this. And excluding pastures, which, as you saw in the case of Brazil, are a significant part of our land mass, the world uses about 1% of its land to produce all of its ethanol. And for those who can't read the fine print, the others there is fruits and other vegetables and other items that are produced in land. Again, 99% is pretty much going to food. Interestingly, that's back to that chart I showed you, is the same figure we come up in Brazil. 1% of arable land is used for ethanol, and 1% of arable land goes to displace 50% of our gasoline consumption. And then if you look in these top three crops, again, if you just pay attention, there's soybean, corn, and sugarcane. Follow this on the next chart. You just look at the productivity growth of these crops. And you'll notice that technology makes a big difference. Soybean in blue has seen tremendous productivity increases. Why? Because of genetically modified crops, because of better land management, because of just better agriculture practices. The same growths you've seen here in the United States are evidenced in Brazil in terms of productivity, and this is critical. And when we look at corn and sugarcane in Brazil, again, number two and three crops in Brazil, we have a lot to gain still in terms of productivity. Some will say, an American farmer will say, well, this is what's scary, is that their productivity has so much more to gain. Well, I'd say, you know, if we could just get the Brazilian meat industry to focus on improving their corn production, there may be a lot more corn in the world that will make it possible for both, you know, ethanol production here in the United States, but also ways of life in Asia to continue to improve. Because the irony of this debate is that it's almost as if also the other villain is that guy in China or India who now wants to eat some good food. He deserves protein. The fact that he's eating more protein is a good thing, and we should try to give him more protein. And if you look at just the specific case of Brazil, total food production has nearly doubled in the last decade, mainly because of yield grains. But look at the area in green. We've basically kept the same area. We didn't destroy half of the rainforest or anything to produce more food. We just improved it with technology. And the same thing, my last chart, is to show that the same can be said if you narrow in a little bit more to the sugarcane industry. Our volumes have increased dramatically. In fact, the food volumes, if you consider sugar a food product, have gone up 350% in volumes over the last decade. Well, or actually more than last decade, since 1990. But ethanol production has not kept up. In fact, the reason you see that uptick is not because of some great demand for ethanol in the United States, but merely the fact that Brazilian demand for ethanol, as I pointed out, because of those flex fuel vehicles which started coming online in 2003, appeared. And it is that progress that we've seen in Brazil that is driving our market. Last year, if I'm not mistaken, demand for hydrous ethanol, E100, went up by about 40%. This year alone, I believe the figures we're seeing increases of about 30% already. In fact, our industry is adjusting just in these last few months to produce more ethanol for the market. And while we are seeing increase in crop, in total crop production, we are seeing a slight decrease in sugar production. But rest assured, the sugar market is fine. In fact, if you go look, the sugar prices in the world market are actually almost below at production cost or below production cost. So there's no way to say that increased growth of ethanol from sugarcane or ethanol generally is leading to some dramatic increase in food prices. It's certainly not the case in Brazil. Let me just end then by saying, I think hopefully I peered a little bit through the smokescreen and that some of our opponents are pointing out. I think we've got some of the in the oil industry on the run. I'm hoping that some of them are going to change their minds and see that the future involves us as well. And I hopefully I can help you understand that the path that we're in from moving away from fossil fuels is a difficult one. It's not going to be easy. The road is bumpy. It's very curvy, as some will say. It's difficult. But rest assured that there is light at the end of the tunnel, that we're making progress, that I think if we all work together, certainly in my view, I think if we reduce some of the trade distortions, but more importantly, if we can just maintain our production levels, both in food and fuel, we will show to everyone that this effort, now I think 24-year effort here for this conference and in, for both of our industries for over three decades, has been well worth it. Thank you very much. I look forward to seeing some of you in the conference.